I get to be the second one. You know, I get to be the latest one officially because everyone else is going to be Saturday morning. So I've already gotten a few bids on my time. So far, the bid is 20. So if you want me to end sooner than an hour, bid's 25. Do I hear 25? All right, so I have been charged with Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. So let's go ahead and turn over to Ecclesiastes 3. And I want y'all to know I'm very good with if you need to stand up, if you need to pace a little bit. For those of you who don't know me as well, I work with kids that are physically and verbally aggressive. And I do all kinds of accommodations to make them feel comfortable so they don't assault me or a teacher or other students. So if you need some accommodations, let me know. Just get up, walk around. I won't ask any questions. But if you get a little rowdy, I can put you down. So, all right, Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. And I can try to de-escalate you, but it's a lot faster if I just go ahead and restrain you. So, Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. Appreciate Adam's thoughts this morning. I'm already in Sunday mode, you know. First speakers in the morning, second speakers in the evening. I appreciate his thoughts earlier about the vanity that's mentioned in Ecclesiastes and kind of the conundrum we have all around us. You know, people are grasping at straws. They're you know, shadow boxing. They're looking for things that aren't there. And like you mentioned, Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, I'll go ahead and mention it here in verse 11. Could someone read Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 11?
He has made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has put eternity in man's heart. Yet, so that he cannot find out what God has done.
All right, so I want to hit on that idea. We'll come back to some other ideas in verse 11. But, you know, he says he put eternity in man's heart. So, like Adam was speaking, there's the soul within us. And that soul craves eternity. It craves something bigger than itself. It craves God. And so what happens when you try to live a life without him, the soul's not going to stop searching. It's not going to stop looking. So it fills itself with vanity. It fills itself with all this frivolous things that Solomon devoted his life to. And that's why again and again and again in Ecclesiastes you have vanity of vanities. The preacher says vanity of vanities. So Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, kind of puts it all in context. And while most of the book is kind of focused on a life without God and ultimately it coming down to vanity, Ecclesiastes 3 kind of puts it all in perspective. Whatever way you look at it, whether a life with God or a life without God, Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, is the context of everything. So let's start in verse 1. Can someone read the very first verse, Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 1? So, as we hear Brother Osborne read verse 1, what are some thoughts that come to y'all's mind? He said everything in order. What do you mean, Charles? He said everything in order.
He made things in our lives that can happen. Okay. We're going to change. We're all going to experience the same or similar things at different times as we live.
So we look around. We all look different, but when you get down to the basics, God has put certain things in our lives that are the same across the board, right? I heard someone else. Who else? Yes, sir. Certain things are going to happen, and they're going to happen in the order he set it in. Ecclesiastes 3 kind of speaks to the permanence of God. You know, the things that he's done will never change. You know, this is this idea, there's nothing new under heaven. Okay, so we can do all the research we want, we can rant, and we can rail about the destruction that we're causing to our environment, to each other, to whatever it is that's under the sun. But here he realized Nothing's ever going to change. We go back to Genesis, and we could look at the ark, one of the big promises that he made there whenever he gave the rainbow. Not just that he's not going to destroy the world through water anymore, but one of the big promises, the covenants that he made there, is that the seasons will not end. It will be season after season after season. Okay? So that doesn't give us license, like Adam was saying earlier, that doesn't give us license to use our freedom for destruction. We go to Romans 6 and we can look at, you know, being new creatures, you know, being stewards of the things which God gave us. But it's very important that we see things the way God has made them and we identify them as such. These are things made by God. Yes, sir. And, you know, if any of you are turning over to Genesis 1, I'm sure many of you probably remember the way creation is described time and time again. When God created something, he appointed it. How was it described? And it was good, right? And everything he made, he said it was good. And so when you look at you, he made you too. He looked at you when he created you, and you were good. So as we look through the things that we're talking about here this evening, I want us to just take a moment, and we're going to reflect a lot on ourselves personally. You know, what am I doing? How am I viewing the things around me? And how can I better improve myself? Okay. That's my big goal here this evening, is how can we make ourselves better? Yes. No, absolutely. And I like how, I believe it was you that read, right, the first verse there. My version says appointed, and your version said beautiful, right? Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 1. Oh, is that somebody else? Yeah. Or was verse 11 appropriate versus beautiful? Okay. But same concept there. We got things that are created by God, whether they be described as appropriate or appointed. You know, you have the word beautiful introduced there. And so everything that God does is good. So as we read through this, how can we reflect and think about how can I live the good life and not kind of the way the world, you know, views the good life. I think even there's people who's copyrighted that phrase, living the good life. It might be on a beer somewhere or, you know, Margaritaville or something like that, but that's not what we're talking about. Not the twisted, perverted good life that the world wants to brand and make us all buy into. But how can we live God's good life? Verses 2 and 3, it says, a time to give birth and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build up. There are certain events in our lives that are unavoidable. You know, Charles was mentioning some of those that, you know, there are certain things that God has put in motion. No one will ever change those things. You know, for example, birth and death. You know, what are the only certain things that we're all going to experience in life? What are those two things? Death and taxes. Doesn't mention taxes here, you know, but you got birth and you got death. Everyone's got a beginning. Everyone will have an end. Okay? What are some other things in everyone's lives? You know, Brother Lopez was mentioning that there are certain things in all of our lives that are always going to be there. What are some things we all experience? All right, you can go to the biological things. Certain biological processes are going to happen. Right? What's that? We're all going to experience loss. You know, as much as we would love to protect, especially, you know, I think about Bo, I think about my son, I would love to kind of keep him in this little bubble, you know, that he's in. You know, the worst thing he's ever experienced was he didn't get to ride in Papa's truck when he wanted, right? You know, that was the worst thing that's ever happened to him currently. things are going to get a lot worse for little Bo, and probably pretty quickly, you know. But if I could, I'd kind of keep him in that bubble. But we're all going to experience pain and loss. What else? What are some things we're going to experience? There's going to be a beginning, there's going to be an end. He does a lot here with balance. He puts everything, he'll start off with a positive, he'll bring in with a negative, and he puts everything kind of on the same level. You know, the kind of the good or positive immediately with the end or the negative. And so we're all going to have that life in the middle that Randy was talking about. We know this is all going to come to an end. So it's what we do in the middle, it's keeping things in perspective that's going to make that difference. You know, there's a time to plant, a time to uproot what's planted. As we think about our lives and we think about, you know, there are certain things that are going to be unavoidable, you know, whether we're talking about loss or, you know, certain parts of life that we know are coming up. What are some things we can do to prepare for those times, particularly when you think about times of loss or times that are challenging? What are some things we can either keep in mind or some things that we can do, and we can even apply it just to our audience here. You know, as men, what are some things we can do to help ourselves go through those times that are predictable, we know are coming? Okay. Be prepared. That's an important thing. Right. So as much as you can control your environment, you're going to prepare yourself for the things that you can foresee, right? You know, for those who didn't hear, you know, Stephen mentioned a flat tire. You know, it's one of those things that's probably going to happen eventually. Might as well be prepared for it, right? As men particularly, as husbands or as leaders in our family, there are certain things that we can foresee and we can kind of plan for. There's always going to be the unpredictable. But being as prepared for the predictable that we can be is certainly going to help. Okay.
We're going to suffer loss. We're going to suffer physical loss. But if my treasure is not here, it's not going to take away.
Right. So keeping it in perspective, right? No matter what's happening, whether we knew it was going to happen or we didn't know it was going to happen, understanding that if we put things in God's hands, if we live a spiritual life, you know, that's what's important. Yes. Surrounding yourself with wise counsel. You know, putting people around you that have walked the path you want to walk. You know, that's the beauty of being in a congregation. You know, being in a collective of individuals, you know, like Adam was saying, building that community so that when we're in unfamiliar territory, there's someone who's already walked it. You know, it's always good to be around those who have gone on before, because you take the instance like Adam was mentioning, what, you know, Jen was asking, well, what do you want for lunch? You know, those who've experienced that time and time again were probably thinking, it's a trap, it's a trap. Don't answer that question. You know, a younger man, myself, you know, you just plow right through it, you know, like, I can figure this out, you know, let's go. And, you know, that's the kind of the funny way of looking at it, but, you know, experiencing loss, experiencing those major life moments, it doesn't become easier necessarily, but it becomes more achievable when you have people who've gone through it. Right, understanding everything under the sun's temporary. You know, even these moments that may be challenging, like Chris says, it's going to come to an end. You know, there's going to be better times ahead, you know, Lord willing, given time. You know, he's appointed all of these seasons, you know, and they're going to go in cycles. It's awesome. Which leads us into our next group of verses and you know, to kind of bring it back to more of a, you know, thinking about ourselves. Verse 4 says, there's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to throw stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to shun embracing, a time to search and a time to give up as lost, a time to keep and a time to throw away. I think one of the keys that Solomon hits at as he goes through it, and it's really interesting how he does it, the further in the book that you go, you know, it'll be vanity of vanities, vanity of vanities, but then you'll have these moments where he says, you know, enjoy the wife of your youth, or enjoy the work that you do with all your might. And he'll hit these moments where, you know, even in kind of this vanity of vanities, we're all, you know, the cycles we get trapped in here on this earth that we have to live in until we reach eternity. One of the biggest keys about being a godly person and being a successful person, you know, whatever perspective you're looking at, is the idea of being present. Okay. You know, a lot of us are planners. You know, that seems to be something common among men, and particularly those, you know, of us who have become husbands and fathers, is we, you know, like Kenneth was saying, you know, we think, well, 10 years I want to be here, 15 years I want to be here, I'm going to retire at this age, you know, I'm going to have this property or that property, and we, you know, we have these grand visions, and we prepare and we prepare and we prepare. And sometimes we lose sight of the present. We lose sight of what's going on around us. Okay, so in a world that's constantly lost and searching, you know, what we need to be is present and appropriate. You know, verse 11 says, he made everything at the appropriate, he made everything appropriate in its time. You know, the other versions, you might have beautiful in its time. So let's talk about that concept just for a minute in the context of verses 4, 5, 6. What does it mean to be appropriate? And sometimes we hear the negative quite a bit. You know, don't be inappropriate. But what does it mean to be appropriate? Right. Right. There's a time and a place for everything, right? Someone else had some? Yeah? No. So it's got to be suitable for the circumstances. You got to be appropriate. There's a time and a place for everything, right? And so you think about some moments, you know, there's very clear, defined, you know, like a funeral. For the most part, everyone knows how you're supposed to behave. And we certainly know a lot of things we are not supposed to do. But when you think about life in general, when we think about our daily lives especially, and this idea of being present, I want you to keep in the back of your minds as you go through the week or the month or however long, you know, you can keep this idea with you, how can I be appropriate right now? Because if you can be suitable for the circumstance that you're in, what you're going to be is godly. And what you're going to be is the light in a world that's constantly lost. You know, they're going to be searching for something. They're going to be searching for an answer. And if you're that appropriate person for the life that you're in, if you're present at all times, they're going to recognize it. You know, you're going to be seen as the wise one because you're going to understand what's going on and how to act accordingly, which, when you break it down, that is wisdom. You know, it's you know, the breaking down of knowledge and using it. Mario, you have something?
Yeah, I see it as a...
Yeah. Redeeming the time is a big concept all throughout Scripture. You know, we're on borrowed time. You know, when Christ came and he died for us, he bought us time. You know, God is not slack concerning his promises. You know, some men count slackness, but wants all men everywhere to be saved. He wants us to be appropriate. He wants us to use our time wisely. So when he comes, he will find us working. You know, you can go to Matthew 25, you know, all those parables there about being prepared is this idea of redeeming the time, you know, being appropriate with the circumstances that you find yourself in. And it's a constant challenge. The pressure we put on ourselves and the pressure we put on others, especially as men, sometimes we get kind of put in these boxes, he's the class clown. Oh, he's the angry one. He's always upset about something. And, you look and you think about it as being appointed time and appropriate time. And these things mentioned, there's a time to weep. Man, it's okay to cry. All right. There's a time to laugh. There's good times for that too. There's a time to mourn. There's a time to dance. And there's a time for each one of these things. So if you find yourself as you go through life thinking, I haven't done, or at least I've tried to set up my life where I never have to do any of these things, you may be leading an unbalanced life. And more than likely, you're probably ignoring some big things in your life. So recognizing the season that you're in and being appropriate. Right. Yeah, if you want to see someone who has emotion, you look at the life of Christ. Anybody know the shortest verse in all of Scripture? Jesus wept. Bonus points if you know the reference. John. All right. So John 10:35, 11:35. There we go. Bonus points for everyone who said it. Several of you did it, right? So that's an emotion that a lot of us are uncomfortable with, myself included. I grew up deep East Texas, very traditional background, and, what are you crying about, Now, we lose a football game. My senior year, we were ranked number one in the state. We lost in the preseason before we even started district. We all bawled, right? No one discounted that. Boy, you tried your hardest. Good job. We could cry like babies. But, yeah, any other time, no, you better not be crying, right?
Yeah, and in this list here, there's really nothing that we can do personally through education, through wealth, through position, through talent that's going to change or do anything in this list.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a great way to look at it. There's nothing you can do to remove some of these off your list. Okay, you can try ignoring it. You can try everything within your power to try to avoid, the mourning times, the times to weep. But they're going to come. And a godly person, an appropriate person, is going to recognize the time and redeem even those times. And, all of this is challenging everywhere, for everybody. I forget exactly where the statistic comes, but, I mentioned I work with kids that are physically and verbally aggressive. I work with kids diagnosed with autism. And one of the big issues with autism is you don't get social cues, right? And so through one of my readings, through one of my studies, there was this statistic that says 9/10 of everyone who's fired from a job is for social reasons. It's for not understanding that there's an appropriate for this or that. Okay, and you take individuals like I work with and our kids, they do something and you think, why in the world would you do that? Don't do that. put your clothes back on. We're in the church building. And so, all the things that we would think we would never cross our mind to do, and then you get to other times when we look at our own lives, the challenging times Brent mentioned where we wake up and we think, well, why am I doing this? A lot of times we need to give ourselves that grace of looking at our lives and thinking, I don't have it all figured out, but I got to keep going. There's going to be a time for everything. Right now is kind of one of the down times. I'll turn it around. Things will get better. Someone, yeah, can I? And, you know, we went to Genesis 1. You flip a couple more chapters and you can get the reason why all this is happening. You know, you get the fall. You get sin introduced. You get the world that has been changed fundamentally. And then, you know, God's plan to get us all back, right? And so we talk about seeing kids in these ways and you know, they do some weird stuff. They do some crazy stuff, some inappropriate stuff. But we love them and we keep moving them. You know, imagine God looking down on us and all of our flaws. And, you know, and some of the things, like, you know, Brent was saying, we got it all figured out. And God's just looking at us like a little kid thinking, well, there's a lot he doesn't know. John, you can be next. You know, the challenge and, you know, the verses 7, 8, 9, you know, go into that, you know, how do I, time to love and a time to hate. Well, a lot of that depends on the people around. You know, they're going through their seasons and they're going through their times and, you know, how can I be appropriate with them? You know, if someone's mourning, especially, you know, a loss or something that's happened in their life, I may be in a season of joy and everything's working out, but if I'm going to make an impact, you know, if I'm going to do what God would have me to do with those around me, I got to recognize it in others as well. Randy, yes. Right. You know, God's appointed all these things. So if he's done it, it's going to happen. So then, as was mentioned, as they happen, you draw near to the one who never changes. You draw near to the one who's in control of all these things. And he's the one that's going to get you through them. You know, I mean, that's the conclusion he reaches with all of this. I hope I don't blow Randy's point at the end of all of this. You know, if you haven't read Ecclesiastes 12 yet, you know, it gets good. Okay. Someone else had something? Yeah, Dale. Which is a perfect segue into verses 7 and 8. You know, when we think more about our interactions with others and these seasons that are going to happen, they're God-appointed, you know, and the struggle to be appropriate and, you know, and to bring joy and to bring good into these situations. You know, verse 7, it says there's a time to tear apart and a time to sew together. There's a time to be silent and a time to speak. There's a time to love and a time to hate. There's a time for war and a time for peace. Our actions are going to reflect what's within us. So when we think about these, whatever time we're in, whatever season someone else might be in, and our interactions with them, being appropriate in that moment, you know, doing the good that we can, is going to speak more than what we might say. It's going to speak more than you know, what we might try to put out there, you know, on social media or whatever else way that we might try to communicate with others. It's by our actions and being appropriate in these moments, you know, understanding when it's time to tear something apart, you know, whether it be relationships or whether it be, you know, jobs we're in, you know, relationships. Time to sew together. You know, you think about 1 Corinthians, you know, the situation they're in 1 Corinthians 5. You know, when he writes the first letter, it's a time to tear apart one of those members. They behaved in a certain way. They had made a mockery of the church there, and it was a time to cast them out. But by the time he writes the second letter, it was a time to sew it back together. You know, not to keep them out, that they might be swallowed up in sorrow. You know, they had obviously grieved for what they had done. They had made the appropriate action, and it's time to bring them back. Time to be silent and a time to speak. You know, that's a real challenge. you know, silence is hard. You know, if I just for 10 seconds said no one talk and we all sat here for 10 seconds, it would seem a lot longer than 10 seconds. And it gets even longer, it feels longer if I didn't announce that's what we were going to do. If I just stared at you for 10 seconds and everyone was expecting something to be said, because we're always expecting something to fill the silence. You get in these moments where, you know, maybe it's the season that someone's grieving or someone's lost or someone's struggling in sin or, you know, doing some of these things. Listening to understand what they're going through and being silent as they speak is a real challenge. You know, but how can we be most appropriate? You know, sometimes the time to speak is a real challenge. You know, especially when someone's caught up in sin and it's someone that really it doesn't matter what your relationship with them is. You know, if they're in sin, having those challenging conversations are hard because that whole relationship's in jeopardy, you know, from our perspective. But understanding it's the time for me to speak and then picking those appropriate words, you know, it can be a battle. Verse 8, a time to love and a time to hate. You know, a time to go to war and a time for peace. Anything jump out to y'all in verse 7 and 8? Yeah, it's a great reference to write. If you're one who make notes in your margin, Romans 8:35 that Brother Mario mentioned, you know, what shall separate us from the love of God? Whatever season might be in your life, you know, maybe it's someone's making war with you or hating you or whatever might have be the situation. You know, if you're in God's court, no one's going to change that. No one's going to separate you. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we certainly get comfortable in roles. You know, you think about the war peace. Some of us are really good at the peace, and we don't really know how to function in the war times. You know, I, on the other hand, I'm very comfortable in war. You know, that's what I do for a living. You know, when I go to work, I know I'm going to get hit, and I'm going to get a lot of things, and so it really makes me unsettled when I walk into a room and nothing's going wrong. You know, it might sound kind of weird, but it does. It's very unsettling. You know, I walk in, and if I can't pick my kid out within the first couple of seconds, I think they left. You know, I don't know where they are. I'm in trouble. But kind of growing into those moments that Stephen mentioned, you know, if you're the speaker, challenge yourself to be a little more silent. Grow more comfortable with that. You know, if you're constantly at war, you know, there is a season for that, but there's also a season to be at peace. And you need to grow into those roles. So, 9, 10, 11. What profit is there to the worker from that which he toils? I have seen the task which God has given to the sons of men with which to occupy themselves. He has made everything appropriate in its time. He has also set eternity in their heart. Yet, so that man may not find out the work which God has done from the beginning to the end. It kind of puts it all in perspective. God's in control of all of this. You know, I'm not sure exactly how everyone, your version's word verse 10, but mine almost seems like busy work. You know, God has given the sons of men with which to occupy themselves. You know, well, they got to be doing something, so I'll occupy them. You know, I'm a teacher when I'm absent. You know, I'm not going to trust my substitute to give them new stuff. So, I mean, y'all were in school. You get the busy workout. You got to keep them occupied. That's what verse 10 almost sounds like to me. When God looks at the things we try to accomplish here on earth, you know, you think about everybody in the Tower of Babel. Oh, we're going to build this tower, we're going to make a name for ourselves, and God's just looking at them like ants. You know, confuse the language, just scatter them out. You know, and it's not the time for you to do this. I want you to move. Because ultimately, he's made everything appropriate in its time. You know, you could do the exact same thing in a different context, and it would be inappropriate. But in its time, it's beautiful. You know, in its time, it's wonderful. And that's why he's put eternity in our hearts, so that we might seek him. Even though we may not ever know him like he knows what he's doing, you know, there at the end of that verse. But it's the pursuit that he wants. You know, like Brent says, you know, sometimes he just has this clarity, and then he'll lose it. And then he gets to chapter 12, he gets to that conclusion, and he settles it once and for all. Let's hear the conclusion of the matter. Serve God and keep his commandments, for that's man's all. When it's all said and done, you got to live for God. Whatever season you're in, whatever, you know, may or may not be appropriate in the time that you're currently living in, find God in those moments. Steer towards him and you'll be appropriate. You know, what you'll do will be beautiful. And last thing I want to do is I want to flip over to Ephesians 4. And so, thinking about appropriate, think about the challenge as I send everyone home this evening. And hopefully, again, you know, things you reflect the rest of the week, the rest of the month, as long as you can keep it with you. Ephesians, the fourth chapter, verses 25, pretty much all the way through the end of the chapter. I think these verses are very critical for those who are pursuing maturity, okay? So sometimes when we become Christians and we're trying to become more godly, we think kind of on a surface, immature level, where we think, well, I didn't kill anyone today. You know, even though it was that time for war, I didn't take anybody out. You know, I'm pursuing peace. Thank you, God. But verses 25 through 32 really push you towards maturity. Okay? So I'll read through it. Take any comments if you have them, and then that'll be our lesson for the evening. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one to his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. And let the sun go down on your anger. And do not let the devil take opportunity. He who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so they might have something to share with those who have need. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. Do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you have been sealed the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ has also forgiven you. And that's our challenge. Any thoughts?